Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta, my amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. We'll be reading today, here on the Courage Handyham system, World Radio Online. World Radio Online is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 New Bridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Handyham system, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handyham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handyhams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. Our website is www.handyham.org. We'll begin today with the online version of World Radio for September 2009 with News Front. Region 3 championships canceled. Political unrest in Thailand has led to the cancellation of a ham radio direction-finding championship event in IARQ Region 3, which encompasses most of Asia and the Pacific Islands. Thailand, also known as the Land of Smiles, was scheduled to host those regional championships from October 29 through November 3 near Bangkok. In the streets, the yellow shirts, supporters of the present government, are taking on the red shirts, who are loyal to the former prime minister. The Radio Amateur Society of Thailand was concerned about safety of competitors and spectators. Two of USA's best radio orienteers were planning to event. There's no time to reschedule a Region 3 championships in another country. However, IARQ Region 1, which includes Europe and Africa, is still planning to hold its ARDF championships from September 16 through 21 on the Black Sea coast of Bulgaria. That will be immediately after the 8th World High-Speed Telegraphy Championship at the same location. That was supplied by Newsline. New Oregon mobile cell phone law exempts hams. Oregon House Bill 2377 prohibits driving while talking or texting on a handheld cell phone. Once enforced, drivers who violate the law could be fined up to $90. Like a similar law in California, the Oregon measure permits adult drivers the option of using a cell phone with a hands-free system. Also, like California, the law will prohibit anyone to receive or transmit a text message while in motion. It also forbids drivers under the age of 18 from using any form of cell phone or texting device with a car in motion. Oregon radio amateurs began a political drive to ensure an exemption for mobile ham radio operations. In the version of the measure passed by both houses of the Oregon legislature, their work was rewarded. In addition to hams, also exempt are those operating a motor vehicle while acting in the scope of employment as a public service officer and people operating a motor vehicle while providing public safety services or emergency services as a volunteer. Also exempt are those using 11-meter citizen radio or UHF family radio service two-way radio gear. A spokeswoman for Governor Ted Kolonkowski said he will sign House Bill 2377 into law. The effective date will be January 1st, 2010. That was submitted by the Oregon Live, Oregon's legislative website, through Newsline. A Michigan ham dies in Field Day tower collapse. Larry Prelog, KE4PM of Niles, Michigan, was helping to erect a 30-foot-high tower for the Blossomdale Amateur Radio Association on Saturday, June 27th. He climbed the tower when it had collapsed under him. He was airlifted to the Borges Medical Center in Kalamazoo, where he succumbed to his injuries the following day. He was 57 years old. A professional radio technician by trade, Larry Prelog was most recently employed as a telecommunications specialist for the Lakeville Regional Healthcare System. Throughout his career, he had performed many tower climbs and was considered as being one of the most safety-oriented climbers in the business. A family member described him as being very meticulous about being safe. The Blossom Land Amateur Radio Association is accepting donations to help the family. Its address is P.O. Box 175, St. Joe, J-O-E, Michigan, M-I, 49085. That was filed by the South Bend Tribune and others. Another news front piece, licensed clerical error fixed. Back this past April 28th, the F5YI volunteer examiner coordinator sent an electronic data file to the commission requesting that Howard Schmidt's operating license for amateur station WB7NUV be modified to upgrade from technician class to amateur extra and requesting a new sequential call sign. Based on this application, the commission granted an amateur extra class amateur service operator license on April 28th and assigned him the call AD7CS, Alpha Delta 7 Zulu Sierra. June 16th, W5YIVEC notified the commission that it had made an error in the April 28th data file and that Schmidt had not qualified for an amateur extra class operator license. The W5YIVEC asked the FCC to modify Schmidt's license to correct the operator privileges authorized. As a result of this information, the regulatory agency proposed to modify the license to show technician class operator privileges and to replace call sign AD7ZS with call sign WB7NUV. The order proposing modification was released on June 25th. Schmidt was given time to comment and appeal. On June 30th, Schmidt informed the commission that he did not object to modifying his license to show technician class operator privileges, but wished to retain his subsequent assigned call W7HAS. On July 7, the FCC modified Schmidt's license for station W7HAS by replacing amateur extra class operator privileges with technician class operator privileges, but permitting the Issaquah, Washington ham to keep the W7HAS vanity call. That was all courtesy of Newsline. One more here. We have MIT announcing that they have a new cognitive radio chip. Engineers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology have built a fast, ultra-broadband, low-power radio integrated circuit chip modeled on a human inner ear. It could have applications in cognitive radios. Researchers say that the new RF cochlear is embedded on a silicone chip measuring 1.5 millimeters by 3 millimeters and works as an analog spectrum analyzer by detecting the composition of any electromagnetic waves within its perception range. They say that the new chip could enable wireless devices capable of receiving cell phone, internet, radio, television, and other signals using a single device. The term cognitive radio is a paradigm for wireless communication, in which either a network or a wireless node that changes its transmission or reception parameters to communicate effectively, avoiding interference with other spectrum users. If you'd like to find out more about that new radio chip, you can go online to www.sciencedaily.com and look for releases relative to that subject. That's filed by Science Daily and others. Well, it's time to go to the editor's log. Editor is Nancy Kott, K-O-T-T. Nancy's call is a WZ8C. In my capacity as editor of World Radio, now World Radio Online magazine, for the past half dozen years, I've been fortunate to be able to visit many different field day club sites. This year, I stayed close to home and stopped into my local club as well as a field day site located about 40 miles away, which I had found on the internet. The differences between the two sites couldn't have been more startling. The local club boasted a membership of nearly 100. They are active in Skywarn, Operation CARE, and provide two-meter communications at community events. They have a monthly newsletter, and their meetings have a good turnout. However, only two members were at the field day site when I showed up, and one of them works at the site. They were using a rig of one of the members, who had to do the packing, unpacking, and put up the antenna by himself. When I pulled into the site of the other club's field day, I was surprised to see it packed full of cars, people, trailers, tents, rigs, and antennas. The tables were overflowing with food brought by the members and their spouses. Those not operating were sitting around the picnic tables eating and visiting. This disparity in attendance is a phenomenon that I have noticed over the years. At first, I thought low attendance was due to some clubs just being more focused on two-meter operation than HF operating, or they were less social. But that isn't the case. People wouldn't attend ham club meetings if they didn't want the social contact. Perhaps a lack of attendance at field day was due to a lack of HF active hams, maybe. However, hams, generally speaking, are interested in finding out about unfamiliar modes, especially in a non-pressure situation like field day. After visiting dozens of field days, it finally dawned on me. The one common thread running through the successful versus non-attended events is the availability of food. Hams will go where the food is. Some hams only go to the meetings for their coffee and donuts. At field day, even if the club members show up with the intention of having lunch or dinner, they tend to sit while they eat. This lends itself to visiting with fellow hams. They linger while chatting, and before long, you have a crowd. They may not all be operating, but a few might, at least, long enough to give it a try and say they did it. Moreover, the next time they have the opportunity, operating HF wouldn't be as intimidating. Next year at field day, they will remember their positive experience and would be more willing to come to operate and perhaps help set up or take down the site. Most club budgets can afford the fixings for a pot of chili, some hot dogs, and potato salad. Toss in a few bags of chips and snacks, and you have a start of a buffet that the ham can't resist. If none of the club members can cook, enlist the assistance of a couple spouses. Don't make them feel like galley slaves. Make sure they are treated as members of the group. Getting the family involved in club activities will help create goodwill. To paraphrase the famous line from the movie Field of Dreams, if you cook it, they will come. Try it at your next event, and I bet the attendance and morale of the members improves. 738833. Nancy Cott, WZ8C. I have an article here that's titled Real Amateur Radio by John C. McGrath. Call in 9AMI. When the cell phone rang on the night of January 13, 2009, it was Teresa, my uncle's wife. She stated her father was in a very serious accident in Atlanta and needed to leave her home in Las Vegas that very night. She was calling me because her husband, Dan, who is my uncle, was working in Guyana, South America. Dan was not reachable by any means other than ham radio. I copied her message and told her I would try to get the information to him during our scheduled contact the next morning. As luck would have it, I talked Dan into trying digital modes before he left for his month-long trip to South America. He runs a very conservative setup, and even with my KLM beam, I have trouble hearing him on single sideband. So, on prior days using the new digital setup, I would get about 60% copy on PSK31 or Olivia. And he was hearing me 100% with my 50 watts. His radio in 897 was damaged and only puts out 15 watts. The morning of trying to pass the emergency traffic to him, I got on a few hours early just in case conditions were favorable. I kept sending his call, D.E. Mind, Dan, I have emergency traffic for you. I tried Olivia, PSK31, and CW repeatedly for a few hours when finally I got his call back on Olivia. That was all. His signal was so weak, it was amazing I received anything. But I did know he was there, so I sent the following message. Message 1. Dan, your XYL called, and your father-in-law was in a serious accident and is in critical condition. Recommend get to satellite phone ASAP. End of message. One break. Message 2. I left you on MSG, he earlier done, before we got results on CT scan. Prognosis has changed dramatically. They've never seen such massive facial trauma. Every bone was literally crushed. If he survives, it would take massive reconstruction, which I'm not sure he would want to go through. But they are saying he's got about a 10% chance. There is blood on the brain and heart and lung contusions so massive they may not heal. If he can make it through the next 72 hours, it will improve his odds. Dan, I love him and need him badly right now. But I realize he's in a position where he may not be able to be here. In any case, I'm not sure what's going to happen. I'm trying to prepare myself for the worst and hoping that the Lord will touch him and save him. Because I'm not ready to let my daddy go yet. Tell my husband I'm sorry I can't be more definitive as to what the future holds, and I miss him terribly and I need to feel his loving arms holding me. End of message. To break. And again, recommend call her on sat phone ASAP. Please confirm receipt of message. I never did get a confirmation, although I'm sure he tried, but his signal was very weak. I sent the same message in CW and PSK again to make sure. That was all I could do. I hoped that he was getting the same kind of signal reception that he did in the previous days. The following morning, I left a voicemail for his wife, Teresa, and asked if Dan contacted her. Later that day, I got a call from Dan, and he said he just arrived in Atlanta. He received the message the first time. As luck would have it, the plane that comes in once a week had just left when he got my messages. They were able to recall the supply plane, and Dan got a ride to Jonestown and then got a flight to Atlanta. If he had not received the messages at that time, he would have not been able to leave for at least a week. Moreover, if we had not set up communications, he would not have known a thing until he got back to Jonestown 3 weeks later. In my eyes, this is what real amateur radio is about. Keeping in touch with family out of country and being able to pass some emergency traffic along. I will say I am not involved and have no interest in ARIS or racist-type organizations, but I now have a better respect and understanding of the importance of the folks involved with emergency-type organizations. That was submitted by John C. McGrath, call N9AMI. The Quarter Century Wireless Association, QCWA, has given the Rules and Regs Super Ham of the Month Award to Vic Culver, call W4VIC, Whiskey for Victor, India Charlie, the remarkable secretary of our Tidewater QCWA Chapter 119. Thank you, Vic, for the fabulous QCWA Virginia Beach National Convention and for the great work you are doing with the QCWA Journal in its Reading for Blind Members program. Just as an aside, folks, Vic Culver, W4VIC, is the gentleman who notes all the particular pieces in the journal that comes out 3 or 4 times a year, sends them to me, and we coordinate the effort by me completing the audio from this QTH or location onto an MP3 format and send it to the Courage Handy Ham system, who, as a cooperative measure with the QCWA, distributes all of that information from the different journals of the Quarter Century Wireless Association to members of interest throughout the country and the world. We thank Vic Culver for his good work in supplying the information to us, and it's my pleasure personally and 1BLF to record all this information for eventual distribution by different audio formats, and also on the Internet for worldwide access. I have an article here that's in the DX World section of World Radio Online this month of September 2009. DX is, maybe, the author Kelly Jones and Zero VD. There's a cartoon effect on the front page of this article. It says, Midway Island, 2009. This month, I thought we would step back from the serious side of the XE and inject a little humor. On occasion, we tend to get so wrapped up in the pursuit of the chase that we take ourselves a bit too seriously. How many times have you heard the frequency cops shouting up, up, or worse yet, begin using profanity on top of the DX's frequency? While DXing can certainly present challenges, especially for competitive ones among our ranks, always keep in mind that it's just a hobby. This month, Paul Dunphy, VE1DX, the Canadian ham, provides us with the lighter side of DXing. Last week, one of the local QR peers, that's low power operators, was up the hill to get some answers to his question. He was upset, not because of countries worked or of countries missed, but because of deeper things. Quoting, "When will I be considered a true blue DXer? I've been licensed for almost 20 years now, and I've worked a lot of DX. And still, I don't feel I get the respect of the big guns. Those guys who've been around for 3 or 4 solar cycles, and one is even on his 5th cycle, they don't pay much attention to my ideas or even listen to some suggestions I have. How long will it be before I become a big gun DXer?" This was not the first time we'd heard this question, and it probably won't be the last. We tried the usual answer. "You don't measure a DX's prowess in years," we said, looking him straight in the eye. "Your measure of DX stature is a measure of your understanding of the mysteries of the ages and being able to grasp the meaning of the eternal enigmas of DXing and, most of all, accepting that DX is." "I've heard all that a dozen times," he spouts, looking back at us and glaring with his beady little eyes. "That's how you always answer my questions. With this philosophical stuff, no one understands. Never mind eternal enigmas or that sort of double talk. Why can't you give me the concrete answers to a simple question? When will I be considered a true blue DXer?" We thought about this for a moment. How does one explain such things to one who is not ready to understand? We took a deep breath and gave it a shot. "To become a true blue DXer, you have to believe. You have to believe that DXers are smarter, taller, better looking, and generally a cut above the average amateur. You have to believe that the mystery of the ages and the eternal enigmas of DXings are what they appear, and not question them. Once you are a believer, you will become one of the deserving, and only the deserving are true blue DXers. Surely you can understand this. Just be a believer." The QRP didn't understand. He stared at us for a moment and then asked, with a puzzled look on his face, "Believe what? I don't even know what any of those things are. How can I believe something when I don't even know what it is? What is an eternal enigma? I need examples." It was clear that the QRP wasn't going to accept our explanation, so we decided to give him the details he wanted. "Do you know what long path is? Do you know what short path is?" he asked. "Of course I do," the QRP retorted. "That's one of the first things you learn when you get a directional antenna." We looked him squarely in the eye and said, "Remember when Romeo activated Burma back in 1991? Did you work him long path or short path?" The QRP looked at us with a confused face and then answered, "How should I know? That was a long time ago. Besides, what difference does it make? I have 2XY0RRQSLs and the DXCC desk counted them. So what difference does it make if I worked him long path or short path?" We looked at him with a satisfied smile. "The big guns, you say, do not give you much credibility. They worked him too. We all did. We worked him beaming 270 degrees. And we believed he was there. So did the DXCC desk. The difference is we remembered the beam headings, but we didn't question it because we were believers. How could he be in Burm if you worked in beaming 270? The QRP'er asked. We just smiled and replied, because he was. We are believers. The unusual path, it was one of the eternal enigmas of the Xing. The QRP'er scratched his head and looked at us with more confusion than before. Look, he said, all I asked was, when will I become a true blue DXer? And you are telling me I have to remember and believe a beam heading that was 10 years ago? And that it was 90 degrees off of where I should have been? What does that have to do with gaining the respect of the big guns? It was obvious we'd missed our pitch, so we tried a different angle. If you call directional CQDX for a rare one, something that you really needed, say a P5, and you got an answer, would you believe it was the real thing? Let's say you called for a half hour and finally a P5AAA responded with a 5NN QSL via box 2653 Pengyang when you let off the key. Would you believe you had nailed the real P5? Of course not. No true blue DXer calls CQ anyhow. And if I did, I sure wouldn't send for a car to some slim like that. What has this got to do with my question? We continued on. But suppose that you did send for the card and you really did get one back, and assume even further that you sent it into the ARRL and they counted it. Would you then believe you had worked the P5? The QRPO looked at us for a moment deep in thought. Well, if all that happened, I guess I would believe it. If the League said it was a good one, then who would I be to question it? But that never would happen, would it? He thought for a moment longer. But maybe it could happen, he said slowly, answering his own question. What you are telling me is that as long as I believe the DX is real, then I will become a true blue DXer, and the big guns will respect me. That the true meaning of DX is believing everything I work on the bands is legitimate. We decided this was a lost cause, so we simply said something like that, although not quite so simplistic. Maybe you need to work on it for a little longer. The QRPer started down the hill and then turned and said, No, I don't think I do. I'm starting to understand. All I needed was a couple of examples. I was making the assumption that DX is only when there is ironclad proof. The answer is quite simple when I think about it. Simply put, it can be expressed mathematically as DX maybe plus believing equal DX is. And once you understand DX is, you are a true blue DXer. His face brightened, and he picked up the pace toward the village. We watched him go and slowly shook our head. Some reach enlightenment sooner than others, and even Albert never figured it all out. This particular QRPer had potential, but today he was beaming into solid rock. Son of a gun. What he didn't understand was the enlightenment would come only when he would stop worrying about whether or not other DXs appreciated his sterling qualities. DXs, believe this without maybe, and you will become one of the deserving. When that day comes, you'll know it. All the deserving remember their day of DX enlightenment. And only the deserving will work the DX, even if it is a single P5AAA QSO from Pengyang. Folks, this is your reader, Bob. When I started this particular piece in the category of DX World, DX is maybe, remember, by Kelly Jones and Zero VD. That was about 5, 6, 7 minutes ago. I also commented to Midway Island 2009 with this very comical illustration here. Well, guess what? I never said a word about that, did I? That's not my fault. That's the way the person, I don't know if Kelly is a young lady, an old man, wrote the article. Now, guess what? Here comes the comment about Midway Island. Call K4M. That's a special event. Kilo 4 Mike. A de expedition that is should just about be on the air within a few weeks after the time you read this. The long-awaited de exposition to Midway Island, KH4, is expected to be on air October 9 through 19, 2009. It has been many years since a full-blown operation has taken place from Midway, with most of the recent activity being small activations for a short period of time. Many of the team members for this operation are experienced DXers, several of which were on the 2007 BS-7H operation. If you're missing a KH-4 notch on your DXCC ladder, this will be an excellent opportunity to fill that slot. For more information, be sure to check their website, and I will give it to you folks. It's all lowercase. http://www.midway2009.com/. Well, I think it's time to give the young ladies, the YLs, a chance at the microphone. This article is titled, "The YLs Are Out in Full Force," by Cheryl Muir, spelled M-U-H-R, call N0WBV. There have been many events happening in 2009, and the YLs have been out in full force. Here are just some of the YL-attended events so far. Dayton Hamvention. The Hamvention was a blast this year. The YLRL Slant Buckeye Bell Boot had a crowd, even when it wasn't raining. There were YLs who traveled to Dayton from all over the world, and many YLs were in the arena working at various booths. The YL Forum was moved to Sunday. It is usually held Friday afternoon, and a number of the YLs weren't able to attend. As a result, informal YL meetings and greetings were held in the cafeteria area. This was a great chance to see everyone. And Nutter, Victor Echo 3, Hotel Alpha India attended Dayton and writes that Bark, BE3HAH, and I enjoyed stopping in at the YLRL booth. As a special treat, my daughter Janet, N9ZKU, was able to take the day off work and go with us. One of the highlights at Dayton was a chat with Kay Iman, WA0WOF. Kay and I shared a ride from the airport to the Philadelphia YLRL convention back in the 70s and have kept in touch ever since. Another special treat was to meet all the Chapter 120 gang at the QCWA booth. This is rare for everyone to be there at the same time. Even the weather was good this year. What more can one ask except to wish everyone a healthy and full summer? Now about the HamCom Colorado and the CPAC. The end of May brought the HamCom Colorado convention for the ARRL Rocky Mountain region. The YLs were out in abundance. And Zero WBV, who was the keynote speaker for the luncheon, the topic was Never Stop Learning from the Newbie to the Vet. It encompassed a bit of everything from emergency services to DXing, the expedition, schools, and ham radio, and everything else in between. The Wild Forum on Sunday was well attended, and we actually got an old man, OM, to attend as well, without his YL. Sarah Lyons, AB7PS, wrote, "The first weekend in June was CPAC, the Northwest Division ARRL Convention in Seaside, Oregon. As usual, we had a YLRL table. It was fun to meet the YLs who came by, many of them new to amateur radio. 19 YLs and one OM, who kindly took our picture, attended the YLRL luncheon at noon. And then there was Field Day. Field Day is always an excellent way to get YLS on the radio. Marta Tulis, KC0FXI, operated heavily at W0NT in Colorado. In addition, there was a new ham, Marie Tito, KD0BQD, who was willing to get on and try it if she had help logging. These two ladies show the true Field Day spirit. Both the experienced operator and the inexperienced operator had fun and used their great YL voices to either break through the pileups or start their own run. I hope to get more Field Day information for the next YL columns, so please let me know how your Field Day went. And then there were special events. On May 21st, Dad and I left in a packed motorhome for Indianapolis so I could help operate the special event station W9MSI. That's Whiskey 9, Minneapolis Motor Speedway. On the night before the Indy 500 race, all the YLs at W9IMS took over the radios and operated for 3 or 4 hours. We had pileups on 80 meters, 40 meters, and 20 meters. We had a good time. That's what it's all about, having fun with your friends. We ate well while we were there, too. This was the first time I attended the big race. The Indy 500 was awesome. I'll never forget the feeling I had when those engines started. I can't wait until next year. Of course, we have our silent keys, too. Unfortunately, there are times when sad news also needs to be reported. Alaska recently lost Geraldine Baker, KL7ALZ. Jerry, as she was known, was a great operator and a very active YL. She moved to Alaska in 1942 with her OM Dick, and they began a fun life that involved ham radio and a great love of animals. Jerry was the founding member of PARCA, the YL radio club founded in 1955 by some of the best YL operators in Alaska. She remained very active on the air for many years and never let her YLRL membership cease. Jerry was 83 years old at her passing. Many of you no doubt have her in your logbooks, and if you are fortunate to have obtained a PARCA Lucky 7 award or talked to a YL in Alaska, odds are it was Jerry Baker, KL7ALZ. Also reported as a silent key is Thelma Woodhouse, Victor Echo 3, Charlie Lima Tango, who passed away peacefully on May 6, 2009, in her 95th year. Our condolences go out to both their extended families and friends. Don't forget to send me news. I need to know what the YLs are doing out there so it can be reported. Hope you are having a great summer and you can get on the air. See you on the bands. If any of you listeners out there would like to get in touch with Cheryl Muir, N0WBV, the YL's editor, send email to her call sign, N0WBV, at earthlink.net. I mentioned a while ago the Water Century Wireless Association. We have a participant article here this month. It's authored by Alan Pickering, KJ9N. The article is titled The QCWA and Behavioral Science. Sociologists and other behavioral scientists who study the way folks behave when they are assembled into groups discovered that when people gather, they tend to behave in ways that differ significantly from the way those same people behave when they are alone. QCWA chapters are not immune from these insights into the way we function when we are in our meetings or otherwise engage in group activities. Much of the principal research into these phenomena can be traced to Dr. William Schultz, who lived and taught in California over a quarter century ago. What Dr. Schultz discovered about group behavior, as applied to meetings of people with similar interests, such as QCWA chapter meetings, was that no matter what the subject of the meeting might be, or the activities that engage the attention of the group, three subconscious questions were constantly being mentally raised. One, the first subconscious thoughts that every member has is, who is in charge here? Who is controlling what is going on? Is there any order, sequence, or direction being given to the group? This question of direction and control is fundamental to gaining the participation of those present. Nothing is more disconcerting to someone who comes to a meeting and immediately discovers mayhem, disorganization, small cliques already gathered, or just general chaos with no immediately identifiable leadership. Even if the announced time for the start of the QCWA chapter meeting is as much as 30 minutes away, having no plan to welcome and integrate someone who arrives early can be fatal to their later participation. So even without anyone asking out loud what is going on or who is in charge, subconsciously the question is being processed in the minds of all who are present. In fact, not only is this question of control being asked immediately in the mind of anyone who attends the meeting, that same question is subconsciously asked over and over again as the meeting continues. And only if there is an apparent positively identifiable response will those in attendance continue to be mentally a part of what is going on. Because no one wants to be in a meeting with a bunch of mental dropouts around them. Sometimes all that is required to meet this universal mental need for control is to have someone in charge of name tags who will greet and provide direction to all who enter the meeting space in which the group gathers. Just having someone whose task is to pay attention to and greet all who come through the door and see that they are introduced, if necessary, to another meeting participant or group, therefore, will do the trick of answering in a positive way this first subconscious question of who is in charge. Two, the second subconscious question each participant asks is that of inclusion. In other words, do I belong here? What have I in common with this group of people? Do I really have some past amateur radio or electronics experiences that match the past experiences of any others who are also present? And are my ideas truly welcome? Now, we all know that birds of a feather flock together. And that means that we have to feel we are an integral part of any flock if we are to stay involved and interested in this group of which we have just become a part. So the feeling of inclusion must be nurtured and supported. Having at least a 25-year history since first being licensed as an amateur radio operator is something that all QCWA members share in common and should be a common bond between all chapter members. The details of how we came to amateur radio, how we were nurtured in the beginning of our interest in this great hobby service, will provide good grist for the conversational mill. But feeling included because of shared experiences of some sort is vital to staying active in any group of which we are part. Every time someone with whom we are speaking, or when someone who is making a presentation refers to past events, perceptions, feelings, or common experiences, then our own feeling of inclusion is enhanced and strengthened. Every QCWA chapter officer should be committed to making sure that no one who is present feels in any way left out of the conversation. Exchanges of information and general dialogue going on. A behavioral scientist friend of mine explains it this way. Everyone present in any meeting is silently and covertly broadcasting the call signs of their personal radio station with the call letters of WIFM. What's in it for me? We all want an answer to that question. And if we do not receive an answer that satisfies us, then our participation comes to an immediate end, and we mentally and emotionally drop out. Three, the third and final subconscious question that every person in a meeting is constantly and continuously asking is this, does anyone here care about me? This question is a question that tests our affection for one another, our emotional investment in others, and the degree to which others care about us. Although we may quickly discover that someone is in charge of the meeting we attend and answers the question of who is in charge and knows what the meeting agenda is, and furthermore, that we have the necessary historical qualifications to belong among them, we still need to know that we are appreciated, wanted, and cared for in all of our infirmities and handicaps. Let's face it, we all want to be loved, and when, in fact, we feel loved by any QCWA group of which we are a part, then our enthusiasm for that group rises to a very high level. Loyalty and appreciation to both the group and the individuals who show that they indeed do love us quickly follows. Now, it is a matter of fact that appreciation can be structured by having one or more members appointed to a health and welfare committee for the express purpose of making sure that meeting absentees are followed up and that absences are noted as important losses to the group's future. Having someone ready to inquire by phone or email as to the cause of an absence at a chapter meeting can quite quickly communicate that someone, preferably the whole QCWA chapter, cares about those who are missing. Having the inquiry come not as a structured item of business, but as a free and spontaneous action by one or more of our chapter members or colleagues is a very powerful incentive to be present at and to attend every QCWA chapter meeting. What Dr. William Schultz discovered about the behavior of folks who meet in groups is really not all that unique or new. Most of us recognize the behavioral science aspects of QCWA meetings as being simply common sense, but it never hurts to renew and review what common sense tells us. It is vital that we practice these three aspects of our QCWA meetings as we seek new members to join us. To retain those who have already made that initial step of membership, we need to pay attention to their subconscious questions and emotional needs, control, inclusion, and affection. Those are the three behavioral science legs of QCWA meetings that every attendee enjoys and appreciates. I hope your QCWA chapter practices them as a regular part of every QCWA meeting. Indeed, we are the elite, the proud, and the many. We are the QCWA. So, until next time, I remain Alan, KJ9N. Well, let's move now to MCOM. That's emergency communication. MCOM and you. If it's not one thing, it's another. By Jerry Wellman, W7SAR. There are times when I feel overwhelmed by the length of my to-do lists. To compound what I call this temporary depression, at every turn there's something else to be done. Then the pager goes off for one agency or another. It's at times like these I would give anything to go back to time when there were fewer responsibilities and demands. I could just lie in the grass and watch the clouds pass by. I have discussed these feelings of needing to be involved and not being able to say no before, and discovered that many readers have experienced similar thoughts. One fellow and I seem to be on the same frequency, in that we agree to do something months in advance, like teach a class or participate in an event, only to find when the target date approaches, due to unexpected events, life is busier than expected. Two recent events included a plane crash and a search for a missing 85-year-old. Unfortunately, the pilot did not survive the crash. It was some solace to hear that the family knew that there were many volunteers dedicated enough to respond. Additionally, the family commented that had the pilot survived, volunteers could have saved a life. The thanks made the demand on our time worth it. The other event involved an elderly rock hound who took to Utah's mountains in the heat of summer doing what he enjoyed, being outdoors and exploring geology. This elderly fellow left on a Saturday. Tuesday, a Meals on Wheels volunteer noticed the meal left on Saturday remained outside his door. The sheriff was notified, and Tuesday night, 3 days after he left for an afternoon of hunting rocks, a search began. On Wednesday, he was located alive. He had rolled his truck off a somewhat rugged mountain road. He was dehydrated, but recovered nicely. Looking back, those demands on time were not so bad after all. There is some sense of satisfaction in seeing a task completed and helping get the job done, especially when lives are involved. The missing person search will be a material for the next survival class when I teach to stress the two most important things to do to help ensure your survival. First, tell someone exactly where you are going. Second, tell someone exactly when you will return. Had this fellow done these two things, he'd been found Saturday evening or Sunday and would not have had to spend several more days in Utah's mountainous and hot terrain. Take a moment in your radio meetings to discuss survival skills. Use this perspective. Communicate where and communicate when. If you are injured and or lost a long way from home, even the best survival kit will last only so long. You want to know with 100% assurance that someone is out looking for you. The lesson is also that you are aware of your return deadline and that you make every attempt to get home on time or call and let your family or friends know if you are delayed. Remember, being prepared is great. Be sure someone knows you are missing and that they'll come looking for you when you don't return on time. Folks, that's an excerpt from MCOM and You by Jerry Wellman, W7SAR. I have a few Hamfest and special events. I noticed one in Minnesota where the Courage Andy Ham headquarters are. Special event Cold War Memorial from the site of B-52D crash on September 16, 1958. That's being held September 12, 1500 Zulu to 0300 Zulu. Inver Grove Heights, Minnesota, Southeast Metro. Amateur Radio Club, called W0B, all the various frequencies. If you like a certificate, send an SASE to www.cmarc, that's www.semarc.org. California, Route 66 OTA, 10th Anniversary Special Event, 17 clubs operating 19 stations in and around the old Route 66 highway. Official station calls will be W6A through W6R and include W6W, operating 12 September 01 Zulu to 20 September 2400 Zulu on various frequencies. In Salt Lake City, Utah, there's a special event station September 3 through September 14, 0 Zulu to 2359 Zulu. The special call is K7T, Salt Lake City, commemorating the 82nd anniversary of the invention of the electronic TV by Philo T. Farnsworth, a Utah pioneer. And one more special event in Virginia, September 12, 1400 Zulu, 2200 Zulu, in celebration of the 150th anniversary of the arrival of the railroad to Hendon, Virginia, I suppose, in September 1859. Well, folks, this is your Rita Bob. I'm going to cut it off a little bit quicker this month because my voice is absolutely shot. If you're listening with any attentiveness at all, you can see my voice is sort of struggling through the material today. I'm beginning to show significant deterioration of my vocal cords for all kinds of different reasons. But at any rate, I'm facing the fact it's not so easy to do now. I hope you appreciate the effort, though. I've been reading to you from online the World Radio Magazine for September 2009, published by CQ Communications in Hicksville, New York. This great magazine, World Radio, used to be in print format, but CQ acquired them about 6 or 8 months ago, and now it becomes an online publication. It's done very beautifully. If you were to have internet access, you really should check out CQ itself and see the beautiful graphics and all of the wonderful advertising material that's made available to anybody that reads through it online. But at any rate, that is the way it is, and I thank you for listening along with me. I hope your fall will be a nice one. It's been rather hot lately here, then we had Hurricane Bill bomb through the last 4 days, and we're still standing. This recording is a production of the Courage Antiham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. Again, that website for your courage system is great. www.handyham.org. 73, this is Bob Zeta, my call N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot, right near good old Cape Cod. See you later, hopefully. Bye-bye.